$3,700, set to go up to $4,300 in 2025. And this was because legislation was passed in 2016 that entitles goat herders to overtime pay. Okay, so if they were going to get maybe $1,000 for the month before this legislation in 2016 with the overtime, you know, now they can get up to, like I said, $3,730 is the amount they get minimum monthly pay for a goat herder right now. It goes up to $4,300 next year. In support of goat herders and the salaries they get, a 2019 wildlife safety report estimated that a human crew costs roughly about $28,000 to clear an acre. Any guess on what a goat crew costs? So $28,000 for a crew of humans. I don't know how many people's in a crew of humans. A goat crew is usually considered about 300 goats. So $28,000 for a human crew. Matt?
I guess it's 2 days.
We're talking cash. So 28. So you have a dollar amount?
I forgot what your daily salary was.
Well, the monthly is $3,700. So that's, you know, like 10.
Okay, I'm guessing $250.
$500 per acre for a goat crew. Okay, but it seems like that study was limited, and I'm not thinking they factored in the human cost, only the cost of maybe feeding the goat. You don't even have to feed the goats, right? I don't know where the even 500 came from if they have to pay the goat herder, you know, 4,000 a month. All right, but here we go. This is where it gets troublesome. Effective January 1st, 2024. Excuse me. The goats are rustling up some dust here. A new state law would require goat herders to be paid the same as other farm workers. I mean, let's just step aside for a second and say, like, yeah, that seems obvious. And how sad it is that we know farm workers are underpaid as it is. And so goat herders, they have to pass a law to get goat herders' wages up to the wages of regular farm workers. So that shows you how far down the scale goat herders are. Okay, but this new legislation to make their pay the same as farm workers, because of the way they work 24/7, could raise the minimum monthly pay for a goat herder from the current $3,700 to $14,000 a month. It's pretty obvious to go to the next thing, which is, of course, goat grazing companies say they can't pay herders that much without significantly raising their rates. But if they raise the rates enough to pay a goat herder $14,000 a month, they would need to charge so much that it would be unaffordable for property owners to hire a goat herd. And so now we are caught in a classic vicious cycle here in terms of, like, what are we going to do? Said the owner of one goat grazing company, "I can't pay $14,000 a month to an employee starting January 1st. There's just not enough money. The cities can't absorb that kind of cost. What's at stake for the public is your house could burn up because we can't fire mitigate." Okay, well, let's just examine this whole claim that there's not enough money. Because to me, this is fire mitigation, right? And fire mitigation is big business. There's a lot of money, a lot of all kinds of governmental money and grants and whatnot going to fire mitigation. There's always money for fire response, and one would think mitigation. Of all the first responders, fire always seems to have the most amount of money and equipment. So maybe some of the money that CAL FIRE is spending on the huge new fire trucks for the coast side, trucks that are so big. This was one of the main reasons why that the Coastside Fire Protection District argued that they needed to build a new firehouse in El Granada and now a new one in Moss Beach, is because the new trucks that they're getting are too big for these firehouses that were built in the 60s. So the trucks are too big. Okay, they're buying these huge new big trucks. But in the same discussions when they were talking about how big these trucks were when they were doing their kind of their roadshow to pitch the new firehouses, they mentioned, the chief mentioned that 85% of fire response calls here on the coast side for the fire department are for health-related calls, are health-related calls. They are not fire calls. So we're spending huge amounts of money to buy huger and huger trucks that won't even fit in the old firehouses, so then having to build new firehouses, and yet only 15% of the calls are for fire. And anybody want to know how many ambulances are on call, on operation on the coast side at any given time? If 85% of the calls to the fire department are for health reasons, you'd think we'd have a whole fleet of ambulances and only a couple of fire trucks. No, we have, I think, one or two ambulances on call on the coast side at any given time, even though 85% of the calls to the fire department are for medical emergencies. Okay, so if we spent some of that money on these huge trucks on goat herds, hey, maybe we got something there. Okay, Matt's giving me a look. We've gone way into that. I've got some, I had some figures here on the amount of money that the Coastside Fire Protection District is spending on their fire trucks. $1.8 million for their new fire trucks. And then they also had some weed abatement where they're going to be paying human work crews instead of goats. So the money's there. I don't know, about $14,000 a month. So that's a problem. We may not see goats out here in the future. All right, real quick, there's literally the new supervisor in town, Ray Mueller, the new District 3 supervisor. He promised that he would open a Coastside office. On this show, I expressed some dubiosity about that and also questioned that even if he did get an office here on the Coastside, I guarantee you it won't be in the Mid-Coast, even though it should be, because the Board of Supervisors represents the county. North of Medio Creek is unincorporated county with no real direct representation. City of Half Moon Bay has its own city council, city manager, basically advocating for itself. Mid-Coast needs a Board of Supervisors, so the supervisor's office should be in the Mid-Coast. Okay, next Friday, Supervisor Mueller is opening his new office in the Shops at Pillar Point, or the Princeton Mall as it's also known. From 4 to 7, his office will be open next Friday, June 16th. Go check that out. At 5:30, there'll be a brief program. Okay, so, but let me just pick at a couple details here. Okay, because thank you, Supervisor Mueller, for keeping your promise. You're opening an office on the coast side, and technically and geographically, it is in the Mid-Coast. However, if you look at a map of the Half Moon Bay city limits, Supervisor Mueller's office in the mall at the harbor is actually within the city limits of Half Moon Bay. So he opened an office geographically situated in the Mid-Coast, but technically within the city of Half Moon Bay. We're both right. Call it a push. You know what? I'm gonna tip of the cap to Supervisor Mueller. He did what he promised he would do. Appreciate that. I'm definitely going next Friday to check out his office, and you should too. Okay, let's get to Matt OJ right after this call. We got a call right here. This is Ruben Truthmaker. I'm glad you were able to get in this morning. It's been difficult. Who do we have on the phone this morning?
It's Michelle Dragony.
Michelle Dragony, Coastal Butterfly. Thanks for the call. What's on your mind, Michelle?
I just wanted to correct you that the Oceano Harbor Village Mall,
yes,
is not in the Half Moon Bay city limits. Let me finish.
Okay.
I called in. Let me finish.
Yep.
So the cherry stem ends at the jetty. That's where the cherry stem ends. And then you've got the Harbor District. Okay. And then you have county. The Oceano is in county land. I'll tell you why. Is because all the permitting for the Harbor Village RV Park went through the county.
That's true, it did. I definitely was sat in on some of those meetings. Okay, well then City of Half Moon Bay needs to update its maps, because I posted a map on my website at
khmbradio.com. Yes, I just entered the laundry room here. I had to get away from some noise out on the street.
Michelle, They need to update their map because I posted their Half Moon Bay zoning map, and the harbor is clearly shown within the Half Moon Bay zoning, city of Half Moon Bay zoning districts. So that's the information I was going from.
Where did you get the zoning? Where did you get the zoning map at?
Right off the city of Half Moon Bay website.
Huh. Okay. Well, is it on your website? I'll look at it.
Yeah, yeah. You can go check it out on the website right there. So that's a that's an interesting point to bring up of, like, is there some confusion there about where the city limits are?
Well, I mean, it's not for me. I don't know what I'd have to look at that map. I mean, my studio is in the harbor, so yeah. My address is Half Moon Bay, even
right.
though I'm in the harbor in unincorporated county. Yeah. And I went through San Mateo County Planning to get my permit.
Right. Right.
So
I mean, the county has been talking about rezoning the harbor, and there was no, you know, the down Princeton and Harvard Avenue and everything, and there was no discussion of the city of Half Moon Bay with that. So I was very surprised when I went to look that up. I thought the Cherry Stem also ended at about the existing RV park.
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I would actually love to get it sorted out. I wonder what my address would be if we got it sorted out. It would probably be Princeton Harbor.
Oh, that would be interesting. Does Princeton have its own zip code?
No. I'm Half Moon Bay 94019. Oh. And so to your point, it's really confusing. But just in terms of who's getting the Oceano tax money,
yeah,
it's not Half Moon Bay. Cherry Stem ends at the jetty.
Okay. Well, we need to investigate
that. Actually, you know what? I think the Cherry Stem actually ends with Sam. And remember, and that Aaron Hotel, so it goes all the way up to there.
Hmm. Well, okay. Michelle?
We'll talk soon.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. Always appreciate you keeping us online in line here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Listening to you on the radio.
Okay, thanks, Michelle.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, not only does Michelle keep us in line, but online, too, is I just got word that streaming is back on. So you can turn off your transistor radio and go over it. And let's get right now to Matt. Okay, Matt. Matt OJ, a tireless and enthusiastic Coast Skyway advocate. Matt, in our past three meetings, so we've had three shows with you, March 17th, April 14th, and May 12th. If people want to go back and listen to our entire discussion, because it's very worthwhile. Okay, a lot of things have been talked about here. I will admit that I was pretty much staunchly like, this is ridiculous when we started. And I've been basically a tabula rasa on which you could write your story, Matt, because I'm interested and I appreciate your enthusiasm for this project.
Yeah, I would put it this way. I've been observing your transition here. He started out, I would call, gondolophobic, and he's been maturing into more of a kind of a gondola curious sort of attitude.
Okay, wow,
that's the way
very
I like
nice.
To look at it. All right,
yeah, Matt is almost like a member of the cast here now, and you can see he's just ready to move right in. Okay, I'm gondola curious, but at the end of the day. That's going to be on Urban Dictionary. That should be on Urban Dictionary soon, although I'm scared as to what the definition is going to be. But at the end of the day, I'm not yet convinced. How are you going to move people like me from the, like, into the yes column? Because I feel like you're going to need more definitive yeses.
Sure. Yeah, this is exactly the problem that we're grappling with, because I have talked to some people who are who don't support it. And I'm always surprised to run into such people. And it's occurred to us that there's two basic problems. One is that too many people have misconstrued this, and I think it's our fault for not really getting the description of it out there properly, misconstrued this as a Half Moon Bay city project of some kind. They think that this is a Half Moon Bay level project, and you want it in Half Moon Bay because it's good for Half Moon Bay. I'm on the air here. All of Frank the engineer is banging on the am I good?
Yeah, Frank told me to bring a ball peen hammer today, and I was like, why would we need that? Matt is a nice guy. I'm not going to need it on it. Now I see.
But yeah, that's true. So what I really need to emphasize much better than we have been doing is that this is a regional mass transit project. In exactly the same way that BART is a regional mass transit project, or AC Transit, or the ferry system across the bay is probably the best analogy. It goes up to the ferry building in the city, and if I live up in Crockett someplace and I want to go to a ball game, I've got the choice: do I want to sit on the traffic on the Bay Bridge, or do I want the alternative of jumping on the ferry at Vallejo and coming across, having a great experience at the time, doing the thing? Is that only to the benefit of the ballpark or of the Embarcadero economy? No, it benefits everybody in the Bay Area who has this mass transit, very special and kind of an unusual mass transit option at their option.
But devil's advocate. Let me just jump in here for that. It's a regional project.
Yes.
Okay. One whisper, one complaint that I've heard, because I've been talking to people too. Like that's kind of like my entree now at like cocktail parties.
Excellent.
Like,
okay, that's a good sign.
Coast Skyway 4. Okay,
that's called buzz, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Getting the word out. Like a lot of people. I think a lot of people go, I haven't heard of this, in which I say, well, what?
What?
But
it's the buzz of the coast side.
Getting the
wink, wink.
Coast side buzz is the buzz of the coast side, right, Michelle? But okay. One reservation people have about that is, okay, but there are things that we need here on the coast side. And when this becomes a regional project, guess what? Guess who always, always comes up on the short end of the stick, seemingly, whether it's like San Mateo County budget or other larger things, SamTrans, whatever, guess who always comes out on the short end of the stick? The coast side. So when we take a project that was intended originally or conceived originally as a way to solve a coastside problem, traffic here on the coastside or commuting transportation issues, and it becomes a regional issue, now all of these other outside the coastside
stakeholders,
exactly the word I was looking for, now their influence and what they want are going to drive this project, and we're going to be left with some scraps out here.
Well, that's... I guess it's a pretty theoretical kind of abstract objection. I mean, I listen to that, and I think the project is a mass transit line with a terminus at Half Moon Bay in walking distance to Main Street, and with a last mile transportation network included in the design of it. I don't think whoever's interests are getting included in this thing, it can lose the part about terminating in Half Moon Bay near Main Street. I mean, that's what the core, the backbone, and the foundation of the entire concept is. You can't say, oh, we're going to do this project, but we're going to cut Half Moon Bay out of it. Well, that's not the project then. It's not even close.
Right? But, Matt, I could totally see that happening. As an example, how long has it taken to get BART to the airport from San Francisco?
What?
Right. If it's taken 25 years, and I'm not even sure BART is even there yet,
sure. But
how is this going to happen out to Half Moon Bay?
But again, because it's not happening out to. This is the project. There is no project now. There's no gondola. It's not getting extended all the way to Half Moon Bay. That would be a little more analogous, right? The BART system is getting extended all the way to the airport. Not the same thing at all. The system is being built from the ground up, and it consists of, it is defined as Half Moon Bay to CSM, at least, or to the Hayward Station. And you can't take Half Moon Bay out of the equation, because that's what the thing is. That's what it is.
Right? I mean, so. I would say theoretically, that's a theoretical discussion that the cynic in me, the observer of government in the Bay Area, a person who felt strongly and advocated for this high-speed rail that was supposed to connect Southern and Northern California and now has been poison-pilled down to Fresno to, Bakersfield, a corridor that is irrelevant in terms of, like, the major commuting that needs to be done.
Right.
I don't have a lot of confidence that at the end of the day, the power, the influence that the coast side wields is going to keep our interests at the top of the
page.
See,
the thing is that this, I think, gets back a little to the thing that I started with, conceiving of this as a coast side project to benefit us, right? And the people who have the power are, of course, County of San Mateo, San Mateo City, SamTrans, to the extent that it'll be involved in it, the Transportation Board of San Mateo County, and then onward up to Sacramento. Those people are not doing this to benefit Half Moon Bay. It's not that the project benefits Half Moon Bay. By including Half Moon Bay, it benefits Half Moon Bay. By including Half Moon Bay, it is the project, and it benefits all the people in the county, at least, in the whole Bay Area. I like to think of it as a Silicon Valley, as the scope of this project. And there's no reason why they would, why anybody, no matter where, what office they're sitting in, would cut Half Moon Bay out of this project, because that's, again, that's the definition of the project. You can take a look at anything and say, well, I like what that project is. I like what that idea is. But I can't really support that idea because, for all I know, it might change into some other idea that I don't like.
And that's,
well, I mean, but what kind of reasoning is that? You know?
Well, I mean, again.
It's like saying, I like Teslas, but what if they ran on steam? Then I wouldn't like them anymore.
We're still trying to get BART to the airport. I could see this starting with, okay. This is a regional project with the terminus in Half Moon Bay. Let's start at the Hillsdale Caltrain station or wherever they're going to start it at. Let's build it out to 280. And then once it gets there, I could see it be like, you know what, the cost to build the rest of this from 280 to Half Moon Bay, we don't have it in the budget this year. Let's put it off to the next five-year plan.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, it ain't happening because this is the end of the project.
The high-speed train system has made you very cynical,
it
among
has.
Other things. But let me just point out that there's absolutely no need for a segment from Hillside to 280 without the rest of the line to the coast side. It doesn't make a lick of sense. You can already get on a bus and you can go from, you know, CSM down to, you know, well, if there were a park and ride. But there's no place to go to. That segment would serve nobody's interest and would perform nothing and would be useless. It just doesn't make any sense to hypothesize about something that doesn't make a lick of sense in its face.
Well, I feel like there's theory and there's reality. And when I look at projects like the high-speed rail and the BART not even being to the airport yet after the amount of money, if we can't get that extension to the airport where like so much money and so much traffic is going, how is this going to happen?
Well, I just would running out of time, but on this last thing, just I would urge all listeners to bear in mind the distinction between an extension of an existing project, which is, you know, can be problematic for various reasons, and the entire project by itself, which whose central definition has to come to Half Moon Bay and has to involve coming down from the skyline to Main Street here.
Okay, let me talk about some more of my cynicisms here.
Okay,
you can help me get out past it.
Good.
So I have dubiosity about that. Like we're just making words up today. So
we have a good word called doubts, I guess. That one
dubiosity though. I mean, it's like four syllables.
Four syllables. You know?
It sounds lofty.
Four syllables. Good.
Okay. And people are like, is that a word? And so they get thinking about that, and they don't hear the other stumbling that I did. It's a technique they teach you, in broadcasting school. Thank you. Wave the shiny object over here, and meanwhile, pick their pocket over here.
DBS.
Okay. Right. Exactly. So I have serious doubts about it. And people I've talked about, will we get something that does anything for us out here? Will it even get out here? Is this the priority that Coastsiders want? Peter von Bleekert, in his original article on this, made some claims that really have led to a little bit of my dubiosity, my cynicism on this. One of his claims, he talks about urban renewal, and that the word urban on the coast side here, now you're kind of like throwing down the tribes here. We've got new people that are moving over the hill to the coast side who kind of want the things, the amenities they had on the other side of the hill. We've got old timers that live here, like this is why you live here, for the semi-rural atmosphere. So for Peter von Bleekert to be talking about urban renewal, that gives people pause. One. Let me add one more thing. He also made a claim that he thought it would only take 3 years for this project, including permitting. When you're making a statement like that, that really undermines to me the credibility of other things that he is saying about this project. because it tells me he has no idea what it takes to get a any project, even a house. But you're not getting a house built in 3 years here, let alone a project like this.
Fine. So what I'd like every all of the listeners
I said it would
do,
be this is like you gotta this is closing today.
I know closing. What I need Ruben to do and what I need all of the listeners to do is forget about Peter von Bleichert. He was never born. He never lived on this planet. He's a very smart guy, and he does know a great deal about this mode of mass transit.
Yeah.
But his initial paper was just a kind of a back of a napkin kind of thing. You cannot, you must not, it doesn't make any sense, put very much faith in any of the details in there. So what if he used the word mass transit? I mean, pretend he didn't. That doesn't really mean anything. We had yesterday a Zoom meeting with the consulting company who we'll probably engage to do the initial feasibility study. They're called SCJ, and they are very interested in getting working on this project. They just finished a project down in L.A. with a gondola to the Dodger Stadium down there. They finished studies from across the Hudson River between New Jersey and Staten Island. And they have a whole unit of their consulting company that deals with cable-drawn transportation issues. They just quoted us the price of $50,000 for an initial $50,000 for an initial feasibility study that would pin down a lot of the details that we then really could take as our baseline and talk about. Number of towers, a number of stations, the height of the thing off the ground.
You had mentioned in previous discussions that this was kind of a feasibility study light, though. It's not a full-blown feasibility. What is the difference?
Well, the difference is you have to figure out some of the details. You have to get the project defined before you can discuss the project, bring it up before the constituencies that are going to be interested in it, the transportation board, the environmental people like the Coast Commission. And the PUC, the San Francisco PUC, who owns the Crystal Springs area.
Right.
Yeah. Caltrans, presumably for crossing 280, is going to have something. Oh, no, here we go.
I saw my head just exploded.
But the point is, just broadly, really get a much better definition of what this project would have to be, how many stations, how high, a rough ballpark cost number they will come up with, and then we'll be able to talk about things that are much more concrete and real. Now, on the problem of permitting and whatnot, I have to remind everybody that on the 19th of last month, I think I mentioned this on the last show, Gavin Newsom announced a pretty significant program for precisely funding $180 billion for out-of-the-box thinking, innovative, green, zero-emission mass transit infrastructure. Okay, it's not all for mass transit, but it's for infrastructure of all kinds, definitely including getting people out of cars. This is his big priority, and he is determined to get his hands on as much of Joe Biden's infrastructure money as he can and put it to work in projects like this, exactly like this, in California. If this project doesn't qualify for the grant money from the state, then nothing does. And as a part of that, equally, to provide a fast track, to provide a streamlined permitting process that will make things move along much faster than we're accustomed to remove a lot of the CEQA obstacles that people use to block, opponents use to block perfectly worthy projects just because they don't like it, for whatever reason, red-legged frogs or what have you kind of syndrome. And this is, again, the planets are coming into alignment because of this kind of initiative at high levels. People who do have the muscle to make these things work. And unlike the high-speed train, there's too many players in that the map of that high-speed train from L.A. L.A., I think it was really just a great deal of straight up corruption that got that thing sunk in L.A.
Yeah,
I read an article about the thing in the New Yorker. But anyway, this is much more manageable. This is the county. The county people, I mean, Ray Mueller is quite a strong supporter of it. We had who sat in on this meeting yesterday with the consultants, but Deborah, my colleague of the Gondoliers.
Deborah Harder Williams.
Harder, yeah. And Maz, the city engineer, was on the phone. He and Matthew Chittister are our advocates inside the inside the city.
Let me. We got like three. This is an important question I want to ask you, okay? Because we're talking about stakeholders.
Yep.
We talked about constituents, but the question I have for you, Matt, is how and who will the decision be made to go forward with this project in terms of when we talk about constituents and stakeholders. Is the citizenry a stakeholder or participant? Will this be a ballot initiative? Will this be a straight up vote through county board of supervisors or state or something? Like, how is the decision going to be made to go forward? And is there a mechanism for it to reflect what the citizenry here on the coastside and even in the region that we're talking about, the regional? Is the citizenry going to have a say, or is this already matriculated up to the government level where it's out of the citizens' hands? This is either going to happen or not happen.
Well, okay, yeah, I get the question. I don't know. Well, how these kinds of projects work? I mean, I would again take an analogy like the extension of the BART system in Chinatown up in the city, which was a tremendous boondoggle. Spent a huge and ridiculous amount of money on that per mile. I don't know whether the citizens of that neighborhood of Chinatown were, given any input into it or not. I mean, that's one model, but I'm not sure that anybody wants to, or it's even the best idea, to give citizens veto power over a project like this. I mean, there's a lot. It's like, should we? Here's an analogy: the breakwater, right? Taking down the breakwater, or don't doing that. Do the citizens of El Granada have any geologic or the kind of actual engineering expertise that it takes to make a decision whether that's a good idea or not?
Right.
Okay, I'm not sure that they do. But I will say that when this does go forward, it will be as a result of getting enough people on board to say, yes, we think this is a good project. And actually, Anna Eshoo is quite a strong supporter. She said she has promised her support in rounding up funding sources for it. And then the next thing is we have people who support it, including the supervisors of the county, preferably all five of them, but definitely Ray is already on board. And then we say, okay, let's get the money. And then they go to talk to all of the people in Sacramento who can make requests for federal funding. They talk to Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who's a very high priority. He's a transportation secretary, and he'll have some funding to come out of the Department of Transportation. And they get the money in a bucket, and the money is approved for fiscal year, and then they break the ground. Okay? So whether you'd have something like a proposition or a vote, I do not know.
I guess I just have my cynical hat on today. It sounds already like this project is already almost detached from granular on the ground, what people walking around the coastside. It doesn't really matter what people on the coastside think or want. Like, this project has moved up to a higher level. It's a regional project in which big regional players are getting involved. Huge companies with big financial stakes are chomping at the bit to get involved. And, Joe and Jane Public here on the coastside, who just want, a swimming pool or something like that, are not really feel a little bit disenfranchised of, like, have we even taken a poll that says that gets a legitimate several thousand?
The polls aren't free. That's the problem. Sure. You
okay.
Spend
but
as much money as you want on this.
But if we can't afford a poll, how are we going to afford this project?
But we don't want to spend a poll. We don't want to spend city money. That's the whole.
Well, I guess as a citizen here, I would like to see. Have some numbers, like, what is the level of support here on the coastside for this project?
Because, that'd be great. Sure. I would love to have such numbers as well.
But I would say, Matt, if we can't afford or don't want to spend money on a pole, but we're going to spend billions or, hundreds of millions for sure on this project.
Sure. Okay. Well, and on that, I would have to go back. Is to take a pole, you have to say what the project is. And that's one of the reasons of this initial stage of the
maybe after the feasibility study would say you need a poll
whether you do or not, but the results of that can be then put forward before people.
Okay.
We don't have any description to even put forward to people.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So there's that, right?
So what I also see is, I'm sorry, Matt. You're not done here. Like, when we come back in the fall, we're going to need an update on this.
There'll be tons of updates
then, keep going on this, because I'm really enjoying this topic and this conversation with you.
Let's do.
Whether I agree with it or not is irrelevant. Like, this is an important project, and I'm really happy that we can share this information with people and have this discussion. So thank you for coming in all of this spring.
Sure.
Really appreciate it.
And my pleasure.
Thank you, Matt. And listeners, thanks for sitting through the technical difficulties today. Hopefully you're able to hear all of Matt's discussion and his points about the Coast Skyway. Next week is our last week for Season 6 of Coastal Windage. Be here. We're going to have kind of sum up the season, talk about what's going forward next year, and say our goodbyes for the summer. Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. For Frank the Engineer, for Matt OJ, Coast Skyway Advocate, and all the interns, this has been Ruben Truthmaker, Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.